has a lot of time to conduct.
Do something like this.
He said, like, I either set up a car lot or might as well get a car wash.
There you go.
Because I'm not going to eat and drive at this age. My reaction.
I was turning or something.
Go.
So, especially these local ones, they're improving. Right.
Good morning, everyone. It's 10:01, and I'm going to call this meeting of the Texas Commission on Fire Protection to order. I'd like to welcome all of our people in the audience. Thanks for making the travel into Austin for this meeting. It's important that we have all of our stakeholders engaged as we make decisions up here in the best interest of our Texas Fire Service. So, again, thanks for taking some time out of your day to be here with us. We'll move on to our agenda items. First, we'll start with item number one, which is the call to order with the invocation and our pledge of allegiance. Before I start that, as we do our invocation, before we start, I would like to ask for a moment of silence. Since our last commission meeting, we've lost a number of firefighters here in the state of Texas. I'm going to highlight four, and this is not an all-inclusive list, but some of the ones that have passed on are Benny Howard, who was retired from the Dallas Fire Rescue Department. He served this commission as a member of the Firefighter Advisory Committee for a number of years. And I'm told that way before I ever got involved with advisory, he's one of the ones that did a lot of the initial writing of the language that we're still using in a lot of areas today. So certainly a tremendous amount of service to the Texas Fire Service. Benny passed away on February the 3rd. Next is firefighter paramedic Andy Jeffries of the Galveston Fire Department, who passed away in the line of duty from a medical emergency on February the 7th. Firefighter Edward Heichel of the West Fire Department, who died in the line of duty. He was struck by traffic on I-35. May the 28th. And then most recently, on April the 14th, firefighter Dan Wright of the Abbott Volunteer Fire Department, he was struck and killed by a fire apparatus. So before we do our invocation, I'd just like to ask for a moment of silence. So if you'd all please rise. Commissioner Wilson will lead us in our invocation after a moment of silence.
Lord God, we thank you for this morning and for a new day of life and a new day to experience you. Lord, we lift up the family members, the loved ones, the friends, and the departments that all of these folks were affiliated with. Lord, that you would just bless them with a special blessing, as so many are going through the grieving process. Lord, we ask your blessings on this meeting, and we ask your blessings on all of us who are making decisions here today. And we pray for your wisdom, Lord, your wisdom that goes beyond reproach, that you would grant us that wisdom in making all these decisions, and that ultimately every decision would be for the safety and well-being of all our first responders out there. We pray for the safety of all of those at all the departments represented here today and all the departments throughout the state of Texas. Lord, bless us, bless each one here represented today, and keep us safe as we depart from here. It's in your holy name, the Lord Jesus Christ, that we pray. Amen.
If you'll join me as we pay respects to the flag of our country.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And now the flag of our state.
Honor the Texas flag. I pledge allegiance to thee, Texas, one state, under God, one and indivisible.
Thank you. You may be seated. Okay, we'll move on to agenda item number two.
Roll call, excuse commissioner absences.
So if you'd please stay here when your name is called. Commissioner Cantu. I'll cover the absences at the end. Commissioner Coatney.
Present.
Commissioner DeVillis.
Here.
Commissioner Glenn.
Here.
Commissioner Hamilton.
Here.
Commissioner Jones.
Here.
Commissioner Lowell. Commissioner Morgan is here. Commissioner Sharma. Commissioner Smith.
Here.
Chairman Seelman.
Here.
Commissioner Vandegrift. And Commissioner Wilson.
Here.
Okay, we do have a quorum of commissioners. I did receive information from the three missing commissioners. Commissioner Law, he's continuing to be out as he seeks medical treatment for a serious medical condition. Commissioner Cantu had a sudden work conflict that required his absence, and Commissioner Vandegrift had a sudden family emergency that made it not able for him to attend today. So I'd entertain a motion to excuse these three commissioners.
Second.
Motion by Commissioner Morgan, second by Commissioner Jones. Any other discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? That motion passes. Thank you. Item 3.
Commission meeting minutes of January 26, 2022.
Commissioners, you should have all had an opportunity to look over the meeting minutes from our previous meeting. I'll entertain a motion or any discussion that we may need to have about the posting of that.
I will say that should have been 2023. Sorry.
Oh, that's all right. We knew what you meant.
Thank you.
So moved.
All right. Have a motion to accept by Commissioner Jones.
Second.
Second by Commissioner Wilson. Any other discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? That motion passes. Item 4.
The Budget and Strategic Plan Subcommittee may meet on April 20th, 2023 during the Commission meeting and provide a report relating to any recommendations developed by the Subcommittee relating to modifications to the agent's operating budget and strategic plan. I can tell you that Subcommittee has nothing to report at this time unless staff has some update.
Okay. Seeing none, we'll move on to item 5.
Reports from fire service interest groups and agencies on matters relating to their specific organizational purposes, functions, activities, and objectives, including reports from TEAKS, the Texas Fire Chiefs Association, the Texas State Association of Firefighters, the State Firefighters and Fire Marshals Association of Texas, the Texas Fire Marshals Association, the Texas Association of Fire Educators, Texas A&M Forest Service, the National Fire Protection Association, Texas State Association of Fire and Emergency Districts, the Center for Public Safety Excellence, the State Fire Marshal's Office, and the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation.
Okay. We'll go down the line here in order. So anybody here to report from TEAKS?
Good morning. Gordon Lohmeyer, TEAKS SD Division Director for the Fire School. On behalf of, Fire Marshal David Brannon, who is the TCFP representative on the Fire School Advisory Board, I'd like to give you a brief report. Our next advisory board meeting will be on May the 4th in College Station. Some of the big things that's going on at the fire school is we will be soon commissioning the Les W. Bunty Admin and Classroom Complex. So we'll have substantial completion on that 57,000 square foot complex on May the 2nd. The ribbon cutting will be hosted at 10 a.m. on July the 6th. Everyone is welcome to attend the ribbon cutting. Be glad to have you there. In this building, there'll be 14 classrooms downstairs, capacity of nearly 700 students, and it'll be a permanent home for a lot of our staff that currently is in portable buildings, so a plus-plus both for our internal and external customers. We're working a lot of capital improvements on the fire field, fire water project expansions, doing some new water wells for our wastewater treatment system. So things are going well, picking up the pace. We're busy. Parking is at a premium, and that's always a good sign. We talked about some of our leading indicators for a return to normal at our last advisory board meeting. One of those indicators is the number of pro board certifications that we issue. So through half of the year, through half of fiscal year 23, we've issued just over 4,700 pro board certs in a little bit over 50 different areas that TEAKS is accredited to certify. So we're very excited that normal is back, and I appreciate your time this morning.
Any questions for TEAKS? Gordon, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
I'll put in a quick plug for TEAKS just in case anybody doesn't know or forgot. Rick Wall is here with us somewhere in the room. If you haven't registered to earn CE credit for today's meeting, make sure that you circle up with him before you leave today. And make your time really worthwhile. Okay, we'll move on down the line to the next is the Texas Fire Chiefs Association. Anybody, Rusty, do you have anything to pass on?
Had a wonderful annual conference.
Yeah.
So that was very successful. It I don't know, but probably one of the best attended we've had in quite some years.
Yeah, I know the attendance was up. The numbers were really up. And I know right now the Texas Fire Chiefs Association is working on their Fire Chiefs Academies. I believe the next one is happening in Grapevine, mm-hmm. and then there'll be one in the fall in San Marcos, and really I think that's the only activity we have to report at this time. Okay. We'll move on to the Texas State Association of Firefighters.
No report.
Nothing to report. All right. The State Firefighters and Fire Marshals Association of Texas.
Good morning, Commissioners, Presiding Officer Steelman and Agency Chief Wisco. First and foremost, let me just say thank you all for what you do for the fire service. On the State Firefighter and Fire Marshal Association of Texas, my name is Donnie Boggs. I currently serve as the first vice president on the executive board. What we've been really doing now is trying to finalize all our details for our upcoming conference and training conference and convention June 9th through the 14th in McAllen, Texas. There's a lot of information on our website that you can find to do registration and things on. I'd personally like to invite each and every one of you to attend if at all possible. And if any of you would like to be a presenter on our training days, which are Monday and Tuesday, the 12th and 13th of June, certainly contact Director Rutland as soon as you can. We'd like for you to come down and take part in that A Taste of the Valley. And if you've never been there for that, it's basically every fire department down there will actually make and serve food, beverage, whatnot. Basically, some of it you might not have ever had before, but it's really a good thing. As y'all well know, this is legislative session. We've been extremely busy coming down and meeting with our reps and our senators on some bills that we know will affect the fire service. Several of our e-board members have been here several times to the Capitol to testify before committees in support of some of those bills, and we're going to continue to do so up until the time that they either die or they go forward. The Fire Consortium group had met for several months prior, establishing the priorities for that. Chief Wisco was part of that consortium group, so if you'd like any more in-depth detail, I'm sure Chief Wisco can cover that. We're really proud we're launching our new data management system. Our data tracking system over the past few years has been very frustrating and not very user-friendly at all. But we've now got this 2 years in the making of getting our very own system, very much like the FIDO system. It's very user-friendly. If Donnie can do it, Ned and the first reader, we're good. And I was able to register myself and pay dues in 3 minutes. That's a record for me. So we're real excited about it. Hopefully we'll have the entire system up and operational prior to the conference in June. We've also hired a part-time media marketing person. I don't know if you go on Facebook very much, but there's a whole lot being told about the SFMA. The young lady's name is Kim Hilsenbeck, and that is her expertise. And she's flooding Facebook and Twitter and all these social media sites with stories. It's a day in the life, and it's talking about individual departments, individual firefighters, male and female, and families. So bringing a lot of light to the SFMA, and we're just really excited about where she's going to go with this thing. We held our legislative day on April 5th on the south lawn of the Capitol. We added 9 names to that monument, line of duty death. And I know Presiding Officer Steelman has already pointed out we've lost several firefighters already this year. I know 3 of those especially were line of duty deaths, and it's just unfortunate. One is too many. So that is the report that I have. If you have any questions, I will certainly try to answer them.
Commissioners, any questions for SFFMA? Right, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. Next up is the Texas Fire Marshals Association. Seeing no movement, the Texas Association of Fire Educators.
Good morning. Jason Jackson on behalf of the Texas Association of Fire Educators.
I just wanted to kind of recap. We recently held our annual conference, and similar to Texas Fire Chiefs, we had a record attendance for our conference. Really good show. We had all ranks from firefighters to fire chiefs, fire academies, several training providers, a lot of folks we have never seen before at our conference. So it shows there's a lot of interest out there to continue growing our organization and to continue to train and serve the Texas Fire Service as we can. Moving forward, we mentioned last time that we're looking at doing some training related to training officer development type courses. We're still moving forward with that. Hope to have something out here hopefully by the end of the this calendar year, maybe the beginning of next year, to be able to start doing a pilot program. So we've got some really good training coming down the pipe for that. Other than that, I have nothing else to report. I'd be glad to answer any questions you have.
Commissioners, any questions for Taffy? Thank you, Jason.
Thank you.
Next up is the Texas A&M Forest Service.
Good morning, Presiding Officer Stillman. Sorry about that. Tried to adjust it. Commissioners.
You might drop it at the end, not at the beginning.
I wish I had something important enough to mic drop on. I don't. But I did want to give you a quick update, Texas A&M Forest Service. Since the last commissioner's meeting, we had 598 wildfires reported in the state. Those burned just over 28,000 acres. Of those, just shy of 600 wildfires, the agency, Texas A&M Forest Service, responded to 119 of those wildfires, burning 25,000 acres. So those numbers are much lower than we saw in 2022. What 2022 gave us was severe drought conditions, and that led to a reduction in fuels out and on the landscape. So we don't have the deep grasses we had in 2022. Visiting with Commissioner Hamilton earlier, he hasn't broken his mower since October of last year, and that's the case in the Panhandle. That's the case in the Trans-Pecos. We just don't have much grass out there. What grass is there? It'll absolutely burn. It's still cured. We don't have any green out there, but there's just not a whole lot of it. And so we saw a significant reduction in wildfires this year. When we get a fire established, particularly in far west Texas, Trans-Pecos, it will grow. And so we have upstaffed several times this year as we get cool fronts brought into the state. We are currently upstaffed with aircraft. As a reminder, we don't own any aircraft, but we do contract aircraft. We currently have 10 single-engine air tankers contracted in the state and 2 air attack platforms. We're going to hold those until conditions improve in the Panhandle and far west Texas. We've leveraged TFMIS quite a bit this year. We've deployed 200 TFMIS firefighters since your last meeting and 64 engines through the TFMIS program. So we've leaned on TFMIS this year in lieu of going out of state. As a reminder, when our firefighting capacity is exceeded in the agency, we'll typically reach out to natural resource agencies across the nation to backfill with firefighters. Instead of doing that, we've leveraged TFMIS heavily, and that's been well received, and we've established some really good relationships in doing that. So we're excited to continue that model going forward, utilizing TFMIS to augment our capacity. The state, I mentioned, it's dry in Panhandle and far west Texas. Currently, the drought monitor shows 38% of the state is in D2 through D4 drought. That's your exceptional, your extreme, or your severe drought conditions. Luckily, everything basically east of 35 is greened up and in good condition. But out west Texas, it really won't change until we get some moisture. That's the end of my report. I'll be happy to answer any questions and not drop the mic.
Commissioners, any questions for Texas A&M Forest Service? All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next up is the Texas State Association of Fire and Emergency Districts.
Good morning. Clay Avery, Interim Executive Director on behalf of the State Association of Fire and Emergency Districts, or SAFE-D, if you don't want to say that whole thing. I just realized, sitting here listening to everybody else talk about their conference, that our conference was actually in between the last meeting. We somehow pulled it off despite all of Central Texas freezing over and limbs coming down everywhere. We were able to have a record-setting conference. Special thanks to Chief DeYer, who presented and was highly well-reviewed. I meant to tell you that at some point. But an amazing experience from the Emergency Services District community. That we had there, record attendance, record number of exhibitors, and we're looking forward to next year being in Irving in 2024. Looking forward, we are consumed primarily right now with the legislative session. I won't bore you with all the details, but the headline is we're constantly advocating for local control over a dedicated revenue stream that the voters intended to provide resources for local responders. That's all we want to do is provide folks the tools they need to get the job done. Firefighters, and obviously in the ESD world, we also have EMS ESDs with paramedics and folks over there. So that's what we're fighting for. We're also apparently having to fight for the right to fight, or the ability to fight and advocate on behalf of our ESDs. So that's another thing we're dealing with. I do want to say one special thing about a particular bill, 4073. That bill is, we are very excited about that bill with regards to the commission, because it's set up primarily, I think, for the kind of situation we're seeing in a lot of ESDs. Folks are struggling for personnel in some of these departments, and the ability to have firefighters who are recently retired and maybe moved out into an emergency services district be able to resume their service without having to worry too much about their certifications is really a fantastic thing, and I think will benefit a lot of ESDs that are looking for personnel to fill their service. So great stuff on that, and we're hoping to see further progress on that. With that, I will gladly answer any questions.
Commissioners, any questions for Clay? And say thank you, Clay.
Thank you.
All right, next up is the Center for Public Safety Excellence.
Good morning. My name is Leonard Chan, the current chair of the Texas Center for Public Safety Excellence Consortium, or the Texas CPSC Consortium. The consortium strives to develop a collaborative relationship among fire departments across the state to achieve excellence through continuous improvement, peer mentoring, and professional development, especially through the Center for Public Safety Excellence's agency accreditation and professional credentialing program. Over 50 people from 16 departments in Texas attended the Excellence Conference in Orlando. At the conference, Plano, Georgetown, and Denton all obtained or renewed their agency accredited status. In our elections, I was elected as chair by default. Dennis Redd of El Paso is vice chair, and Roland DeGaulle of Southlake will be our secretary. Pflugerville just held the basic accreditation class at the beginning of the month, and we held a consortium meeting before the class on fire service data, local government 2030, as well as parent organization updates. CPSC will be holding a summer symposium in August in Chicago with in-person classes, including one to be a peer assessor. The Public Information Officer Credentialing Program launched earlier this year, and a fire analyst credentialing based on the upcoming NFPA 1022 is expected to be in development process by late 2023. And I'm open to any questions.
Commissioners, any questions for CPSC and Leonard? Thank you, Leonard.
Thank you.
Next up is the State Fire Marshal's Office.
Good morning, Commissioners. Orlando Hernandez, State Fire Marshal. Just a couple of updates. So September 1, we're going to be moving toward the NFPA 1 and NFPA 101 2021 edition. And the thing is, if there's a jurisdiction in your area, or you know a jurisdiction that does not have a fire code, the local government code does allow those communities to adopt the standard that the fire marshal's office has adopted. So they do have a way to adopt a local fire code if they don't meet the requirements of 250,000 or more in their county or adjacent to that jurisdiction or the amount. So we will be doing that. It will be effective September 1. And the other item I have is we are now neighbors. We moved into the Barbara Jordan building next door. So we're on the 8th floor. So if y'all need anything from us, we're over there at the Jordan building.
Oh, now you can buy me lunch. Cool.
So any questions, I'm available.
Any questions for the State Fire Marshal's Office? Thank you. And next up is the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation. Okay, seeing none. And I know, I'm sorry.
Skipped an FPA, I think.
No? Oh, no. We did I? Okay, maybe that's why. So I know we skipped over NFPA. I know Kelly's not here, but I do think that Jim Reedy has something to report on 1851, so we'll allow him that time.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I'm sure it'll be worth your time. Well, Commissioners, my name is Jim Reedy, and I'm a member of the NFPA 1851 and 1971 committee. I do not work for NFPA, so I do not work for NFPA. But the NFPA process is, the first part of the process is the public input process, which anybody, doesn't matter if you're an NFPA member, who you work for, what you do. Anybody can submit an input to change a standard, change some language in a standard, and that's what the 1851 process is just beginning. So the public input process is open and for 1851. Now, 1851 is selection, care, and maintenance of bunker gear and such. 1852 is the same for SCBAs. Those two standards are going to be merged together into a standard called 1850. So if you're looking for to submit public input on 1851, you have to go to 1850. And it tells you right on the front page, it says, if you want to submit a public input, it says a here. And you click on the here and it takes you to it. It's not a terribly difficult process. It's kind of in the middle somewhere. But the public inputs close on June the 1st. And know that we have to consider every public input that is submitted. Doesn't matter what it is, we consider every single public input. So June the 1st is the deadline. It's on the NFPA website, 1850. And if anybody has any issues with it or problems with it, you can always contact me. So, and again, I don't work for NFPA, but I thought it was important to bring that up because we are an NFPA state for bunker gear. So go to 1850, submit a public input if you like, and it will be considered. Thank you.
Any questions for Jim? Jim, certainly valuable information. Thank you for sharing that with us. Okay, I believe that's the end of our stakeholder reports. Commissioner Glenn.
I just want to make sure. I know we didn't have a representative from the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation, but I think it's worth pointing out to people there's a significant change this year. And my understanding is because of budgetary reasons with the federal government, making sure that we don't get caught in a government shutdown. They have moved the National Fallen Firefighters Memorial up from the fall to the spring. And so that's actually coming up here in a couple of weeks. The memorial there in Emmitsburg at the National Fire Academy is going to be on Sunday, May 7th. Just as it normally is. Anyone that's traveling up there and is volunteering or working, I don't have it opened up, but I know that the registration area has been moved. I know for the past several years it's been at one location. It's going to be at a different location this year. So anyone that's traveling up there, they will have an email that tells them where to go. The other thing that has changed is there's normally a wreath laying ceremony at Arlington National Cemetery at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, and that's been moved back. And I believe that's on Friday. It normally is, I think, on Thursday, and they've compressed that. But since we didn't have a representative, I just thought that was some good information to pass along because it's the big thing is that they've moved it up from the fall to the spring.
Sure. Okay. Well, thanks for sharing that information.
Yes, sir.
Okay. And again, the stakeholders, thank you all for taking some time out of your day to be here to keep us informed of the activities that you have going on in your different groups. Okay. Closing out item 5, we'll move on to item number 6.
Report from Commissioner Representative to the Homeland Security Council.
Commissioners, I know Commissioner Vandegrift is not present today, but he did reach out and notify us that he did attend the last meeting, and he also had nothing to report on this, so we'll move on to item 7.
Report from the Health and Wellness Ad Hoc Committee.
Thank you. So the Health and Wellness Committee, as I'm chairing as a public member, and again, I just wanted to let you know as a public member, I see the a huge importance for this committee. There is a lot of injuries, top injuries that we can bring light to and educate and create a path for everyone to stay good. So if you look on our website, we have top injuries of cardiovascular. Thank you. The cancer prevention, top injuries, and soon we'll have the mental health. And speaking about mental health, I see that as a huge concern, especially during COVID, that needs to be addressed and everyone educated. So that is next. And also I see two committee members here, Chief Green, Chief DeYear as well. So thank you so much, and you're welcome to add anything as well on our initiatives. One thing I do want to address and get some input is due to sunset review, we, I believe, are making the Health and Wellness Committee not just an ad hoc committee, but as it was originally created. And so I want to start like a little discussion on that and get your input.
Okay. So,
how
would you like to begin that?
the sunset review has, it wants us to have more uniform and rules, general rules about all committees, which I see they are very important. But I can also see some rules and regulations, such as having all the committee members meet in person, can become a burden on a lot of members and make it harder to work and work on initiatives and get progress, and it's an extra hurdle. So, it's hard to meet quorum sometimes, and then you can't get a discussion, and if you have an in-person meeting and, last-minute cancellations due to sickness, schedule conflicts, whatever, it's hard to make it in person versus being able to hop on a Zoom if you can't find a babysitter, or you you're sick but you can quarantine and still hop on a Zoom, so forth, or class. So that I can see that as being a hurdle. And as a public member, it's we want to make health is important. The fire service protects all citizens, and we want to be able to protect fire service as well. And so it's very important to make it efficient for these committees to work. That I see that as it could be more difficult and a burden. But I understand, the sunset regulations all together are good. And so just that's one concern. And in terms of quorum, actually, we've had some members step off, and so we will be looking for new members soon in the future. So we definitely, if anyone is interested in joining, we want to make sure we cover a broad range of all agencies, all interests, big city, small city. So we will be looking for more members to help us proceed with our initiatives in the future. If there's anything to add regarding any consideration, just let me know. I do know we have the 463 agenda later on, that's fine too.
Well, no, and thank you for sharing those concerns from that committee perspective with us. And I think maybe there is an opportunity when we get to that item further down in the agenda on 463, we need to have some deeper discussions about that. That would be the appropriate place, but thanks for kind of precursing it, saying, hey, there's some things that are going on here that we may have some issues with or some concerns about. So,
thank you.
Any questions for Commissioner Sharma? Okay. Is that the end of your report?
Yes. Okay. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Moving on to item number 8.
Subjects for future commission meeting agendas.
Commissioners, anybody have anything they would like to see on a future agenda as an item?
Mr. Chairman, I need to fall on the sword here real quick. We had a minor oversight. There was a request at the last meeting to discuss the changes to the 439 matrix that came up back in October. It just got overlooked, so we will have it on the August agenda.
Okay. Any others? Okay, moving on to item number 9.
Future meeting date.
Commissioners, our next meeting and workshop are actually set. The workshop is set for August the 9th at 2 p.m., with the following day, August the 10th, being our regular commission meeting, which would start at 9 a.m. And this is the one that we moved from July because so many commissioners had scheduling conflicts and we were going to probably have trouble getting a quorum here. So anyone have any issues or problems with the new dates? Remember, that is a workshop and then a meeting the next day. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, if I could throw something out for discussion.
Certainly.
And it really was something on my mind before we had the issue with July, but I've done some research in the last few months. I was ready to talk about this in January, and I missed the meeting. But I'd like to propose the thought of shifting this meeting cycle, the four meetings a year. Let's get away from the January, April, July, October. Shift it 1 month to February, May, August, and November. And I'll give you a little background on why I'm thinking that. It's not up to me, but I just kind of want to throw it out because we have the same problems every year. So in January, there's the TEKS Leadership Conference, the Fire School Planning, you got the MLK and a President's Holiday. We always have terrible weather here, winter weather in January. And at the end of the month is the SFFMA Planning Conference. So we have a lot of conflicts in January for the entire board.
IFF also has ALTS, our affiliate leadership training in January.
And I missed that. But there's one more conflict right there. Whereas you look at February, historically about the only conference there and the only real issue is the TAFE conference. They seem to have settled in that February area. But the rest of February is kind of open. Now you still run the risk of some late winter weather there, but fewer conflicts as far as the board's fixed. When you look at April, the biggest conflict here in April, other than when the session's going on, they have a huge motorcycle rally. It's called the Rot Rally. And it's usually about a week and a half, 2 weeks. It makes hotels almost impossible to get your hands on. I think everybody's experienced that once or twice already. And of course, you got the Easter holiday. But when we look at May, May's pretty much wide open. You get the end of May, TDEM has their conference. Now, you got to keep in mind that most municipal governments are deep in the budget process in May, too. So that could be another consideration here. July is off the charts. It's almost as bad as January. You got fire school. You got the union conference every other year, which is a conflict this year. In the alternate years, it's the IAFF conference that's going on in July. You got the holiday there. And then July is when everybody seems to focus their summer travel plans. So we always see conflicts there. And historically, looking back at it, we've always had a problem in July. We have people that miss the meeting. This time we took steps to move it to August. And then the last one, October, while there's not a lot of conflict, we're starting – the football season's kicked off. It's making it harder to get rooms. And you have the ACL show going on for 2 weeks, which makes it impossible to even move around downtown. Whereas when you get into November, clearly you've got Thanksgiving and you still got football games, but they seem to slow down a little bit in November. They're on the road a little more. So I'm just throwing that out there for discussion because what I have seen in the last 3 years is – huge conflicts in January and July. So I just thought about throwing the idea out of moving it by a month. The other thing is we could kind of focus the committee meetings to be in the month after, and that would give staff a whole month and a half to get things on the agenda for your next meeting, and we're less likely to miss some things or be rushed to get some items on the agenda that need to be there.
Sure.
So just throwing that out there. That was a lot to say, but I feel like it's important to talk about because – clearly.
No, thanks for bringing it forward. And I know we've had some informal conversations about that as we've seen these scheduling conflicts seem like they become worse and worse year to year. Commissioners, any thoughts, comments?
I like the idea for a number of reasons that you stated. I would also say, I guess it's my understanding that we typically are looking at the third week and for the same reasons as Thanksgiving oftentimes falling in that third week, why the November meeting might need to get moved outside of that third week, just with the flexibility as we look at August. I like the idea of August, but I also know that our IFF convention is every other year, oftentimes in August, and I think in 24 it's already scheduled for what either may turn out to be the fourth week of August, but it might be the third. But so it may not be a conflict. I know this year we've got Redmond, our health and safety symposium. But as long as we had the flexibility, just like we would in November, but I do like the idea of those months really delayed because I think it helps a lot of us as commissioners that are representing different entities. I think it can be very valuable. That's a good move.
I agree.
Commissioner Cook.
I'm supportive of the change as well. I mean, a lot of the conflicts that the chief mentioned have a direct impact on our ability to attend, but more importantly, on the ability of the audience to be here during those meetings. They tend to be thinner during the current months that he talked about the conflicts occurring in.
Commissioner Jones?
No, I agree with everything said. For years we've had it, so I think it's a good move. I appreciate you bringing it forward and took a while for us to realize to do it, so I appreciate you being the one to find it, because you're right, every year it's something we have to move them, so I agree.
So seeing that everybody's kind of leaning toward being in favor of this, could I propose maybe that for the workshop, we kind of come into that workshop process and start targeting some dates for 2023, or I'm sorry, 2024? Man, where did I go for a minute?
Sure.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you that we did a little research, just kind of looking at those months, and clearly I think we could have a good conversation and have a list ready for you for that August workshop.
Okay. Does that sound good to everybody?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. All right, moving on to anything else on item number 9. Moving on to item 10.
Discussion and possible action on updates to the investigator curriculum manual as referred from the Curriculum and Testing Committee.
Good morning, Pat.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Pat McAuliffe. I'm the presiding officer of the Curriculum and Testing Committee. We have one simple request for your approval for the fire investigator curriculum manual. This, what you're seeing there is a lot of pages, and really the only thing we're addressing here is on the second page under the reference list. So, when this was approved back in January of 2022, the new edition from Jones and Bartlett had not been released yet. It is now out, so we are recommending a change in the fire investigator principles and practices published by Jones and Bartlett Learning, requesting to go from the old 5th edition to the new 6th edition. It's harder to get the old editions of textbooks as the publishers bring out new books. This will also help us to align this reference material with the new fire marshal voluntary certification that is coming out as well. So we're asking that you approve that change for us.
Okay. Commissioners, you've heard the issue. Any questions, comments, concerns?
So moved.
All right. I have a motion by Commissioner Jones to approve.
I'll second.
Second by Commissioner Hamilton. I don't know who went first.
Terry,
Commissioner Hamilton. Any other discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion passes.
I think they approve, Pat.
Thank you.
Thank you, Pat.
Short, sweet.
Okay, move on to item 12.
Item 11.
Right. 11. I'm sorry. Yes.
Discussion and possible action on 37 Texas Administrative Code, Chapter 443, Certification Curriculum Manual.
Mr. Chairman and commissioners, this is a proposal from staff, and I got to tell you, we got great staff here. They're always looking at the rules, and they caught a, I'm going to call it an oversight. 443 deals specifically with the certification curriculum manual. And for years, until this most recent sunset review, 419 clearly addressed the Firefighter Advisory Committee and how things should work through them. This last sunset review, clearly we saw that change. And this rule, as it is today, states that all the curriculum changes, updates, new proposals, whatever, must go to the advisory committee. So staff took a look at this. We've made the changes that you see reflected there to try to match the law, but to also match the process. I mean, and basically what you see is 443.1, we just changed that to read that it'll go to the curriculum and test it, and it'll come to you guys. And if you choose to have the firefighter advisory look at it, you can. It's certainly within your purview, but it was directing it to there, and the law no longer does that. So we're just trying to bring this rule in line with the current state law and the current operation.
Okay. Commissioners, any questions, concerns, comments?
Again, it's just for proposals, so it would go out for public comment depending on how you guys vote today, and then it'll be back in August.
Okay. If none, I'll entertain a motion.
Chief, do you have anything to say about that?
I think he's just getting ready for the next one, right?
I'll make a motion to accept that. Please.
Motion by Commissioner Hamilton to approve, second by Commissioner Wilson. Any other discussion? All those
one comment. You'll see under 443.1B2, we missed one Firefighter Advisory Committee piece in there. We will fix that before we publish it for proposal.
Okay. Commissioner Hamilton, you in agreement with that
yes,
change?
Yes,
Commissioner
yes.
Wilson? Okay. I have a motion and a second. Any other discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? Motion passes. Now, item 11. I'm sorry. Item 12.
Discussion and possible action on rules review is referred from the Firefighter Advisory Committee, 37 Texas Administrative Code, Chapter 459, Fire and Life Safety Educator, Chapter 461, Incident Commander, Chapter 491, Voluntary Regulation of State Agencies and State Agency Employees, and Chapter 493, Voluntary Regulation of Federal Agencies and Federal Firefighters.
Mr. Chairman, I know Commissioner or Committee Chair DeYeer is going to address all of these, but I just want to be clear that these are rule reviews that you sent to the Advisory Committee. They've got a report for you today, and they could be voted on and move forward.
Okay, thank you.
Good morning, Commissioners. Daniel DeYeer. I'm the presiding officer for the Advisory Committee. Do you want to take these separately, or do you want to do them as one group?
I have a preference. What's easier for staff? Separately? All right, we'll do them separately.
I think that's how we've done it in the past. Yeah. I just want to make sure. So on Chapter 459, Fire and Life Safety Educator, this is a relatively new chapter in our manual. It was established in 2019. We reviewed it, and everything seems to be in compliance. There's two parts to it. There's a subchapter A and a subchapter B, and we are not making any recommendations to any revisions. We have completed the review.
Okay. Commissioners, any questions on 459? If not, I'll entertain a motion. Motion by Commissioner Hamilton, second by Commissioner Smith. Any other discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? The motion passes.
Chapter 461 is also even newer. It's just barely over 2 years of age, and the only thing that we had to revise is we're deleting the entire section that had made provisions for the grandfathering clause under 461.1. So we're deleting all of that verbiage in that paragraph. And other than that, we're not seeing anything else that needs to be revised under Incident Commander.
Okay. A little housekeeping change on 461. Any other concerns, comments, questions? If not, I'll entertain a motion to approve. Motion by Commissioner Coatney.
Second.
Second by Commissioner Smith. Any other discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? That motion passes.
So Chapter 491 refers to voluntary regulation of state agencies and state agency employees. This is not a chapter that's often visited, so we had a bit of a discussion on some of the historical aspects of how this came to be, because it was established in 1992, quite some time ago. We had some discussion from staff as well as the members of the committee, and we are not recommending any revisions to this document as it stands. It's very short, just basically three paragraphs.
Okay. Commissioners, any questions on Chapter 491? Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion.
Motion
to approve by Commissioner Wilson, second by Commissioner Sharma, I believe. Any other discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion passes.
Okay, Commissioners, Chapter 493 is Voluntary Regulation of Federal Agencies and Federal Firefighters. This is also a rule that is not often visited, but it has been around since 1992 as well. We were lucky to have had somebody in the room that was able to share some information with us, but this is a very short rule, and we are not making any recommendations to revise anything in it at this time.
Okay. Commissioners, any questions or concerns on Chapter 493? Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion to approve.
So
moved. Motion by Commissioner Hamilton.
Second.
Second by Commissioner Coatney. Any other discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? That motion passes. Thank you, Chief DeYeer. Moving on to item 13.
Discussion and possible action on 37 Texas Administrative Code, Chapter 463, Advisory Committees.
Commissioners, this is one of the sunset recommendations, and we've been kicking this can down the road for right at about a year now, but I think it's been a lot of a good back and forth and a lot of discussion, so it is in front of you today as hopefully final adoption.
Commissioners, any points of discussion or concern we need to put on the floor? I agree. This one has been through the ringer, and I think we've done our due diligence to make sure that, you know, we're getting it as close to right as we can the first round out of the box. So I appreciate everybody's work on the committee on this and the back and forth that we've had. It certainly has sparked a lot of different avenues of discussion for us. Commissioner Sharma.
I kind of already said a lot of stuff earlier, but, you know, yesterday we had a scheduled Health and Wellness Committee meeting in person here, and a lot of our amazing members did show up, Chief Muir, Chief Green, Chief Deere, Lieutenant Salinas, a lot of our, you know, we have amazing members, and you know, some of our speakers couldn't make it last minute due to, you know, early morning issues. They couldn't make it. I got a notice early morning, including myself. And so that can be a concern if we have to have in-person meetings. So, you know, that is just a concern that will make it more difficult and for the efficiency of a lot of committee meetings.
So, commissioners, any discussion? You've heard Commissioner Sharma's concerns. I know that in my review of this, I know there's some language in there that does allow for remote participation in the meetings, but it does have the stipulation, I believe, that the chairperson or their appointee or designee does have to be here in person to conduct the meeting. And I don't know that there's any way by statute to get around that.
It's 463.9 meetings, and if you go to subsection E, it says exactly what Chairman Steelman has addressed, and this is part of the state law. They can meet by video conference, but the presiding officer for that meeting must be here in Austin. I can tell you that recently we've had challenges here as far as some of the requirements that everybody in the room would have to be visible on camera and all that, and we don't have that equipment. I can tell you, though, that with the two new buildings on either side of us, both within a block, they have meeting rooms that have the technology capabilities in there. We've toured them. We visited with the staff. We're even working on trying to do a test run to make sure it all works right. So the opportunity to do that moving forward with all of these committees is there. It would be a scheduling issue, and like I said, we just need to make sure how it's going to work and understand the intricacies of that. But it's certainly possible to do that, and this rule would allow that.
Commissioner Chan has something. Leonard Chan, Houston Fire Department. I do not believe there's anything in statute that requires the meeting has to be in Austin. Other state agencies do have their advisory committees meet elsewhere in the state, but there just needs to be a physical location designated through the open meeting notice, is my understanding of the statute.
You're correct, from my understanding as well. It doesn't have to be in Austin, but you do have to have the Open Meetings Act, a space large enough for the public to attend. And it does, the chair would have to be in that visible location of the meeting.
Allow me to comment. I'll just say that, okay, so in terms of the meeting location, it needs to be a place that's, like she said, available to the public. So it is possible for the meeting to be posted at a different location that the public can access, somewhere in the state of Texas. The other thing is, it doesn't have to be the chair of the committee presiding. It just has to be a member who is presiding over that meeting has to be at that physical location. So if you allowed another person who was at the location to preside over the meeting, then that person just has to be physically present. So those are some of the flexibilities in it.
And all of those comments were discussed by the subcommittee of commissioners that worked on this, and that's why you read what you read here. This is what they came up with. So that's all covered in 460.
Mr. Chairman, and I think just common practice, we should have it in Austin. I mean, because every committee meeting requires staff, and that means we have to make staff go to the physical location to where it's at, and this is their home, this is where they work. And I think this, you know, everybody knows where this is at. It's we have it there, so I think the common practice, and myself and Chief DeYear were on the committee, and I think that was the intent, is that you try to have it in Austin as much as you can, because as we saw with this committee, because it started back when we couldn't meet in person,
right.
It's very difficult to conduct committee meetings, as we all know,
And I think we have to have a, we need to have a location, especially when it's something as important as these committees, to where they can come and, you know, the stakeholders can come and comment on it. And I think if we have that as open as we can, we keep ourselves out of the pitfalls we've fallen into in the past.
Valid point.
Leonard Chan, Houston Fire Department again. Just for point of clarification on 463.9B, when it says should be held in Austin, that's not binding that it has to be in Austin, correct?
Right.
All right, thank you.
Commissioners, any other comments, concerns?
Mr. Chairman, I think in hearing the totality, I don't think anything is keeping us or preventing us from doing it the way that Commissioner Sharma wants it. It's basically if we have a member who's willing to do it off-site, that's public access, we could host that meeting. This wouldn't be the routine. This would be the exception to the rule. Sure. And as long as staff can remotely access in, they can still accommodate the meeting in the same form or fashion as if it was held here. So I think the way this is written allows us that flexibility. I think for the most part, we'd have the meeting in the normal manner. We'd hold it in Austin. But this doesn't prohibit us from doing it in a different way should certain exigent circumstances require that.
No, I agree with that.
Agreed.
So I would let it in writing stand.
Okay. Any other concerns, comments, commissioners? Commissioner Sharman, any other concerns from your perspective as a committee chair? I mean, do we kind of address that one issue that you brought up earlier in our discussion?
That's a good discussion. I would say for the membership is in here, right? The terms are there. For example, if you the membership is good as well. With the terms would start beginning once this is confirmed, then the terms start. Is that correct?
Is that everybody's understanding?
Yes.
That as soon as this is adopted, that starts the clock on the terms?
Yes, correct.
Okay.
My understanding.
Okay.
Well, I think the only caveat to that is we'll have to wait 20 days
for
this to take effect. So it would be whatever 20 days from now is.
Well, it's not going to be 20 days from now because it's got to be published. This is a new rule, and we had to, because of the timing that it took for this, we need to submit it for publication all over again. So it needs to be published for 30 days, and then after that 30-day period, we can final adopt it, and then it'll be a 20-day effective date from there.
Okay.
And I guess when my committee was formed, I was asked to chair as a public member commissioner for the health and wellness. Is there a consensus on everyone keeping the chair of the health and wellness committee a specific role or anyone in particular?
I think that language, the way that I read it, the language in there is at some point, should that chair, that position be vacated, then this rule would kick in, and then it's that committee selecting their new chair, like is pretty much done in the other standing committees with advisory and curriculum and testing.
Okay.
So that's 2 years.
Mr. Chairman, as I recall when we've met both in this and our separate meetings, that's why we collapsed it all into one to make all the committees kind of follow the same format.
Right. Right. Commissioner Wilson.
So this would have to be posted again for publication?
Yes. So what happened was you all sent it back to the to the committee to tweak it one last time. They've done that. But the time frame allowed for a new rule, we had already posted it. Going back and forth, so that expired. So we had to start that clock over. We opted just to wait until now to start that clock. So it'll come back to you. Where are we at? We're in April. So I guess it'll come back to you at your August meeting for final adoption. So that would be 20 days.
It doesn't have to come back. We can final adopt it today, but we still have to go through the process of publication.
Can we final adopt it with the new changes?
If y'all...
Yes.
So if it was published in its prior format, can
that's
we now...
That prior format's been completely withdrawn because of the
time frame. Okay.
So we're adopting in the format that we're seeing right here. That's correct. Written right now.
So it would be published after today. It'll get right. Published for 30 days, but then you could adopt it today, just with that caveat that you got to wait for that 30-day publication, okay. And then it could take effect. That would just have to be part of the motion.
And keep in mind, their suggestion. So, anything for the next publication, which I think is May 7th, would have to be in by noon on Monday. So, you have to have the ability to submit these. So, if it's not in by noon on Monday, it would go into the next publication, which would be the following deadline for that submission, would be the following Monday by noon. So, but typically it's a 30-day from publication, and then you can't adopt it. It's a 20-day waiting period from that adoption date.
I saw legal counsel leaning forward there. So
my point, you guys cannot publish it and adopt it today.
That's not
because it has to have the notice and comment period. So you can't do it both today. So you would publish it. You could vote to publish it today, but then you have to come back for adoption at the next meeting.
State law at its finest.
Okay.
State law is requiring it, and state law is slowing you down. So here we are.
Public comment.
I'm sorry.
Good morning. Just seeking clarification. Gene Center, Richardson Fire Department. This question is probably either for legal counsel or for staff. So once adopted, 30 days where it can be publicly commented on, 20 additional days that it stands before it can be enacted. At that juncture, whenever that happens, 50 days downrange, every current member of every committee will be beginning the first day of their first six-year term. Is that correct or incorrect?
Up to the commissioner. That's the way I understand it.
That's how I
effectively, everybody resets to zero on every committee, regardless of tenure on that committee up to this point.
That's not how I recall the discussions. But.
Well, that's why I'm going to defer to the committee members. It was what the intent was.
If Commissioner Cantu is here, he'd be able to explain it a little bit better. But what we had talked about is whatever term they have left to serve, when they were supposed to cycle off, those who have already been on it would cycle off, any new members. Chief DeYeer, do you recall any variance in that discussion?
I recall a lot of discussion on both directions, but I think based on the way the sunset wording was and what this document says now, I believe his statement is correct.
That's correct.
So asking for clarification, what does the commission intend to push forward? I would love to have that conversation here in the public forum. Is the goal to start every member of every committee over at the beginning of their first six-year term when we adopt this formally? Or is the goal of this commission something different than that? I just feel like that's a very cloudy subject at this moment. Thank you.
Commissioner Wilson.
My understanding was the same as Chief Coatney's, because we talked about and discussed the staggering and so forth. How would we integrate that into it if we reset every term? That doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, for example, looking at the Health and Wellness Committee, we have a lot of vacancies we have to fill just to meet quorum. So, and we have a lot of excellent members with a lot of interest, but it's not enough. So, an idea I, as a public member, how I see as a chair of this committee is we keep all these excellent members we have because we still need a lot more, and we look for a lot more and add to it and just kind of start the staggering that way.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Jones.
So I believe Chief DeYeer is right, and if I remember right, I have rolled a truck, so maybe I don't remember real clear, but that we had talked about that and there wasn't a way to figure in the staggering, but that people would fall off by
natural attrition, as we already have the vacancy coming open that's on the agenda today. But that was my understanding, that it starts the six-year terms and couldn't really figure out how to do the term limits. However, the thought was, just with him knowing the dynamics of his committee, that by natural attrition they would fall off, and so we would be able to fall into place, if I remember it best. Is that correct, Chief Deer?
Yes, sir, correct.
I could offer a suggestion.
Sure.
Because we've kicked this can so far down the road, and the consensus of the committee that worked on it was not to write a rule, it was so restrictive that future commissions couldn't have some flexibility. I think we've solved the rule language issue here with how these committees will function. I think based on the fact it needs to be published, it needs to come back to you all in August from what legal counsel is saying. You have a workshop on August the 9th, and if you wanted to drill down on current members and their terms and what their expectancy is, that would be the place to do that. But the rule is already in the process so that we can get it adopted and get it on the books, because we're 2 years past this, and a lot of people watching us would really love to see this thing making some forward progress today, because I'm
agreed.
Fearful of the questions I'll get if we delay it any longer.
I would agree with that. Mr. Chan.
Leonard Chan, Houston Fire. A question about open meetings and meeting structures and such. By statute, TCFP is supposed to do quarterly meetings. They can do more frequent meetings, correct? And they, as long as the meeting, based on our previous conversation, has a physical location with the chair president at the designated location, they can hold another meeting with the proper notice, correct? So why do we need to wait until August?
I don't perceive anything that says you have to wait until August. Nothing's going to happen with it till after August, because it won't get finally adopted until the August meeting. So it's up to you guys, but I mean, it's a good point.
Sure.
Just another meeting, but that's fine.
All right. Commissioner Glenn.
I think it's worth pointing out, you know, some of the history in, you know, the last year or so as we've been trying to move this forward, but with also, you know, kicking the can down the road as it's stated, and I don't disagree with that. But part of the problem that we've had is we were talking about these staggered terms, and as we talked about the staggered terms, that then as we were trying to do this forced staggering of the terms, that's then what led us to the six-year terms, which is what's in the statute, which is what the legislature has passed. So it's already made it through the legislative process. And so that's what led us to, as what Commissioner Jones was saying, that was my recollection as well, that we already had identified a number of likely committee members that were probably nearing retirement and had already expressed maybe an expectation that they wouldn't be serving for a number of years longer anyways, or an expectation. So it was just going to be that natural attrition. And as people didn't like the natural attrition component of it, then it forced us to talk about this staggering of terms, you know, two-year terms, four-year terms. And as we recall, that's the problem that we got into, that you can't do two-year terms. You can't do four-year terms, because the legislature, the legislative body, then signed by the governor, said they're six-year terms. And so, you know, we keep having this conversation, and at the end of the day, they're six-year terms. So, and it's no more than two. I mean, it's very clear in the statute, and this debate has already been had in committee. People have had the chance, and when I say committee, in a legislative committee. I can't remember which committee it went to. But, you know, whether it was in state affairs or whatever it went to, we've had the chance in open forum for people to go debate this before the committee members, before it went to the House floor. And then it goes to this. I mean, so we keep kicking this can down the road, but we keep having the same conversation about something that they're six-year terms. So, and I think the natural attrition is the likely best path forward. I think that's the cleanest. So we can have this debate again.
But is anybody terms. Questioning the six-year terms?
Well, but we keep talking about this, and that's my point. We keep having this conversation about these terms and how to stagger them, you know. And that's yeah. my point.
But I don't think the 6 years were. Did anybody have?
But I think what Commissioner Glenn is saying is because of the question we had on the mic about does a 6 year start right at when this is adopted, and then that led into where we're at. But it was we couldn't figure out who goes, who stays. But again, by natural attrition, like I said, we have one on here that would correct itself. But I think that was the.
And my point was, you know, this got kicked from the last meeting. And the reason why it got kicked from the last meeting is because somehow, some way, it came through our committee, you know, the TCF, our commission committee, with language that didn't match up with the statute. And so I'm the one that brought it up, said, hey, look, this doesn't match up with the statute. And that's my point. We keep having this conversation about how to stagger terms and to where, as if we could have less than six-year terms, and what's in the statute?
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Hamilton?
As I can tell, whether we take it to the workshop or do it today, we're pretty much in agreement that what we originally designed and discussed was the attrition part of it and the new part, which are six, and if those people came off and wanted to be reappointed, they would start their six to fit the sunset ruling. Whoever falls off, and then if they're reappointed, they're reappointed to start with the new 463. But the system would continue the way it was until said date that they didn't longer work members with the option to be reappointed. I mean, just go on. I mean, I don't think it makes a difference. When we do it, that's about what we're going to do, isn't it? Well, that's my opinion.
Sure.
That's what I would like to do.
Chief Deere, you have a comment?
Against my better judgment, I shouldn't be speaking at all right now, but I feel compelled to just share a little bit of information so everybody's on the right page. So you have all three chairs of the three committees that this applies to sitting here right now. And I don't mean to speak for Commissioner Sharma, but I have a suspicion she's not clear on this, but I did talk to Pat McCulloch, the chair of your curriculum and testing committee, and as the chair of the advisory committee, we're not clear on any of this as well. This has been a long, daunting road for us. I know the Firefighter Advisory Committee created a algorithm to show how we could stagger everybody on our committee while also possibly even adding two positions to our committee. Mm-hmm. And the Committee on Committees had lengthy discussions. There was originally three separate plans. There was a different process for each of the three committees because what we're dealing with is Chief McAuliffe and his committee looks nothing like the advisory committee, and it looks nothing like the health and wellness committee. As a matter of fact, right now, Commissioner, if you don't mind me saying this, y'all are the health and wellness committee. There is no health and wellness committee. We met yesterday, and we couldn't have a quorum because we don't have enough members, which means that responsibility falls back to the commission. That's to y'all. So what we've done, and Commissioner Coney, if you remember, on several of our meetings, I think we had a 20-something page document at one time, and now we've whittled it all down. So we started with this round hole, and we've had nothing but this square peg, and we've been chipping at it as best we can. But I think in my heart right now, what you're looking at is the best this is ever going to look. And I'm all for moving this forward and get this process starting, and then we can come back and look at it. But to Commissioner Glenn's point, there is no way in the world that attrition is going to be the only option for you getting folks off these committees if that's what you're trying to do. That should have never been our goal when we started this whole process. But I know there were people that were trying to start with that as the ends. And we've been messing with the means, and it's just simply not going to work because legislature came out and said six-year terms when the committee restarted. If you recall, the Firefighter Advisory Committee doesn't technically exist. It exists when you pass this rule, and now you're starting us on six-year terms on day one. You could do, if you want to, like you've done unknowingly with the Health and Wellness Committee, you no longer have one. Your only other option is to say, we'll remove all of you tomorrow, we'll start the process for the interviews, and we'll reconvene the committee. But you're looking at doing nothing with that committee probably for another year by the time the arguments get made and both sides of the coin are heard. where today you can actually just move this forward. The next agenda item for you is a vacancy on the advisory committee. One of our senior members with more than a decade of service on the commission has stepped down, and you already have a vacancy on our committee. I can promise you within the next couple of years you'll see at least three or four more of those. The same thing applies with the curriculum and testing committee. But you don't want to mess with that because of their mission statement and what they accomplish every time they meet is very different than what the Health and Wellness Committee does, which used to be an ad hoc committee, which is now a standing committee, by these same rules. So personally, I know we could debate this at length, but I think what you're looking at is the best you're going to do. That's just my 2 cents worth. Yes, both of your chairs are still confused, but the important part is we can still continue our meetings, we can still continue our mission statement, and we can still move it. Still move everything forward the way this is written today.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Jones.
Chief Wisco, so my understanding, the next step that we would need to do to move this where we have it is we need to put it up to go to publication for 30 days. Is that correct?
Right.
Okay. So, Mr. Chairman, I make a motion that we move this to publication for 30 days and that we readdress this as stated in our workshop and in the August meeting due to we're moving into summer. And like we talked about, trying to get commissioners here and the public here, we know that's a set meeting. So with respect to Ms. Chan, I understand and I want to move it forward as well. However, I think it's important that we have as many commissioners that can be here that can be here. And if we move it to a special meeting, that may not happen. But we know we're going to be here in August. So with my motion, I make a motion that we move this to publication for the 30-day publication. We readdress it as stated in the August meeting.
Second. Okay. I have a motion and a second. A motion by Commissioner Jones, a second by Commissioner Morgan to move this forward as presented with the stated fact that we'll come back and address those other details at the workshop in August. Is there any other discussion? Commissioner Cody.
Before we put it to the vote, I'll just say that going back to what Chief DeYeer said, we've discussed this to death. And our intersection has always been what the law says versus what the original intent was of the discussion of the sunset review. I agree this is probably the best document we've come up with. We've compressed it down. The challenge is resetting everybody to the 6 years. There was a concern on that. We know the language allows us to remove people who we believe are not in our best interest. Representing our best interests on any of the committees. That stays in place. The 30 days allows for the public to comment. We can take the public comments under consideration when we do the pre-workshop right before the next commission meeting, and we can finally get this thing done off our plate and move forward with it. So I'm fully in support of this.
Thank you for those comments. Any other comments?
Yes, sir.
So Commissioner Smith.
I fully agree with Chief Coatney. You know, I don't know. It always has been seemed like putting a square peg in a round hole, even from the day we read the original sunset recommendations. I don't think our in the committee our goal at the start was through attrition or to try to eliminate the firefighter advisory committee. We love those guys. We can't do them without. We can't do the job we do without them. And secondly, it's we thought maybe the attrition factor would help us meet the intent of what sunset wanted us to do. That perhaps through attrition, we can meet the letter of the law. Not as that attrition or eliminating certain members off the committee was ever the committee's goal. It never come up in our discussions that I recall whatsoever, just so everyone knows. But I think this document here will be a good starting. I say it's a starting point. We've been starting it for 2 years, haven't we? So I think this may be about the best thing we can get until the workshop maybe drill down a little more. I think every one of our documents is always a working document, despite the fact that they're published. So I'm all in agreement as part of the committee to move this forward as it stands for publication.
Okay. Thank you for those comments. Any other comments? We're in discussion. Okay, seeing none, I'll call for a vote. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? The motion passes. Thank you for that discussion.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll move on to item 14.
Discussion and possible action on filling the current vacancy on the Firefighter Advisory Committee.
So let's go to the deeper end of the pool. Commissioners, I'm sorry, Chief DeYeer.
Yes, Commissioner. So the vacancy that you see in front of you was submitted at our last meeting by...
Chief Swindle.
Yeah. Yeah, we've known each other for a long time. So Chief Swindle, just so you all know, he's a 30-year-plus veteran of the Louisville Fire Department, and he's been the fire chief in Crum for a number of years, but he has served on the Firefighter Advisory Committee for more than a decade, and he's nearing the end of his career, so he's finally stepping down, so he tendered his resignation at our last meeting. I don't know if there's been a historical recognition from the commission, but I'd love to see if there's any way that y'all could recognize the years of service that he gave to the commission, either in a letter or some sort of a thank you to him. So I don't know how that process would work, but effective at the end of our last meeting, that vacancy now exists. So we're now looking to you for guidance for filling that spot as soon as possible.
Okay. Thank you for that, and we'll certainly figure out an appropriate method of thanking him for those 10-plus years.
We're willing to do whatever we can do on our end as well, so if you just...
Sure, we're happy to work together with you on that.
Thank you.
All right. Commissioners, any comments? So normally when this has happened in the past, and staff, correct me if I'm wrong, we have appointed a committee, a small committee of commissioners to oversee a process for determining time frame and requirements and qualifications, so forth and so on. Does anybody recall anything any differently? Is that
been a little different every time, but yeah, that's pretty close.
And I know there's some language in 463 that details something to that effect, right? That, yep. That's how we will address these openings on future committees. So that being the case, and kind of taking, I realize it's not fully adopted yet, but we're leaning that way. And like you said, it's been done a little differently every time. I would like at this meeting, at this point on item 14, to appoint a selection committee to determine and get something in motion on how we're going to replace that vacancy on Firefighter Advisory Committee. And this is just keeping informed with how we've done this in the past and trying to fold it into how we're going to be doing it in the future should this move forward. So for that committee, I would like to appoint Commissioner Wilson as the chair, Commissioner Jones, and Commissioner Smith to determine what that process is going to look like for filling that vacancy, what the requirements are, and so forth. And then we'll have you report back at the workshop in August with a goal of trying to fill that vacancy as soon as possible.
And if I can add, just for consideration, you may go ahead and focus on the needs of the health and wellness as well, because right now they don't have enough members to have a quorum.
So I wasn't sure if I could do that since it wasn't an agenda item.
If you're making a committee to look at replacements, then we're going to follow 463. I think just for you're not taking any action other than just saying they're going to come up with how
okay. You're
going to get that started.
Any conflict with...
I think on the health and wellness committee item.
You're going to be helping us.
Okay, backing up a little bit. Okay, so same committee figuring out the same process for health and wellness to fill those three vacancies too, with a report back at the workshop in August and possible action at the next commission meeting in August, and certainly by the end of the year to have those vacancies filled, I think would be a reasonable timeline. I know those processes take a long time to vet people and interview, and especially if we bring people here to interview like we've done in the past, I know there's got to be a little bit of a legwork on the front end of that. Okay. Any other discussion on item 14? Do we need to take action on that? I mean, it's...
To appoint a committee?
Well, I kind of did. Do I need to get approval?
No.
Okay. All right, I just want to make sure. If anybody's feelings are hurt, let me know right now. Okay, thank you. We'll move on to item 15.
Update from 37 Texas Administrative Code, Chapter 403, Criminal Convictions and Eligibility for Certification Ad Hoc Committee.
I know this is another committee that Commissioner Vandegrift has been chairing, I believe, with the assistance of Commissioner DeVille and Commissioner Morgan, right? So I don't think we're ready to take any action on this today. And in Commissioner Vandegrift's absence, I would ask that we table this and bring it back in August. This is another one of the sunset things that we've continued to work on. So I'll entertain a motion to table that will automatically put it on the agenda for August.
So moved.
Got a motion by Commissioner Morgan, second by Commissioner Coatney. Any other discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? Motion passes. Item 16.
Review of 2022 data collected regarding firefighter injuries and the development of recommendations to be submitted to the State Fire Marshal's Office for inclusion in its annual report.
Commissioners, this is the first draft that Grace has been working on, so I think she just wanted to get it in front of you and answer any questions you might have, but it's not a finished document at this point. It's just coming to you for the first look.
Good morning, everyone. This is Grace Wilson. I'm the Public Information Officer for the Texas Commission on Fire Protection, and one of my responsibilities is the injury reporting program. So, like Mike said, you see in front of you there is the first draft of the 2022 injury data that we collected. And just to remind you that ultimately what your goal is to provide recommendations for the Texas Fire Service based on the injury data that we collected. And you're welcome to give me, any of your thoughts on how to improve the report. Especially if you see typos and things like that, I want to know about them, definitely. But the ultimate goal is recommendations for the fire service, I guess, how to possibly reduce injuries or just things to be aware of based on the data in the report. From what I've noticed in the report, I haven't seen anything surprising, pretty much in line with years past, but I'm happy to take any of your questions or concerns, and we can talk about it.
All right. Commissioners, any questions or comments for Grace?
Grace, this looks good. I like it. I mean, you do great work for us. The only question I had for you was every department has injuries, even minor injuries. I'm not asking you a loaded question to say, are you not hearing from certain departments? Because I'm sure there are, but my guess is almost every department should be turning something in. So are you getting a large number of departments that aren't responding? Because while you're putting great, while you're putting a great product out, it's only as good as the data that's coming in. Because if you're getting kind of garbage in, garbage out's going to come, of course. So as far as the data, so are you getting good responses from departments across the state? And if not, what can we do to try to encourage, require more?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that we are getting a good response. And I know that the compliance officers, when they go around and do their inspections, they're checking in on this stuff, and they're letting people know if they're not reporting their injuries, hey, you need to get on that. And they're following up with them in that respect. I think that we are getting a good response with this. And while if you look on page 5 of the injury report, it's got a section called the bird's eye view. Actually, I'm here at the laptop. Let me just scroll down to it.
That is true. 76%.
Yeah.
Where is it
at? 76, page 5.
At the bottom of page 5. So, as you can see, the reporting rate is 76%. We think that's pretty good because there are a lot of departments in our database that they could be reporting injuries, but they're a lot of times, one-person departments, two-person departments, three-person departments. It could be a little sheriff's office or, a small-town fire marshal's office, things like that. They probably didn't have any injuries or, like, an online school or something. Do you know what I mean? And maybe they don't know that they're supposed to be going in and reporting that they have no injuries, things like that. So, We think it's good.
So, yeah. So basically what I'm hearing you say is those 194, because I see that, and I saw, so those 194, a large number of those, and that makes sense to me, because I know I made the comment that most every department has an injury.
Right.
I hear what you're saying, a one-person department or an online academy, Yeah.
Right. People sitting at desks.
Right.
I mean, not that they don't get injuries, but, you know.
Okay.
Yeah. I will compliment staff. I know I attended a regional meeting up in my area last month, I believe, and or early this month. But I know that's one of the points that they're bringing up in those regional meetings is the importance of participating with this, right, so that we collect the data. But then also, you know, in larger departments, not letting 20 injuries stack up before you decide to try to report them all at one time. And in the severity of the injuries where it kind of negates the fact of the commission doing its due diligence to investigate, you know, cause and effect of that accident. So I know staff's really, really sending that message out across the state, and I appreciate the fact that they're doing that. I know it was well received in our area of our chiefs at our regional meeting.
I have a question, Mr. Chairman. And this goes to Commissioner Glenn's question. Grace, I don't know if this is overly bureaucratic, but would there be benefit for us to contact all the regulated agencies and say, did you have an injury, a reportable injury? And then they could send it back. That way we can get a count of 100% reported, and out of the 100%, 74% of them have injuries. I don't know if that would address that question and be one way to do that.
That would be one way to do that. I'm not going to disagree with you. I mean, I suppose it could be done, and, you know, it would just take me sitting down and, you know, getting the list and start calling people on the phone.
I would send the letter. I mean, I'm comfortable. And don't feel bad about disagreeing with me. Everybody who's sitting in that audience has disagreed with me at one time or another. But, you know, I think that I'm comfortable with that. I'm trying to do what Commissioner Glenn is saying. It'd be nice for us to know what percentage of actual agencies, making them all report. That way we have a true number.
Yeah.
And I'm still kind of beside myself, to be honest with you, with the number of fire station injuries, station duty injuries we have, you know, compared to EMS. EMS has always been a high trender. And to see that number just 10 apart is pretty amazing. Or 110 apart.
You know, we've had this discussion in the past about wouldn't it be nice if work comp and this process could parallel one another so that one set of documentation is automatically going to get you in the other set of documentation. And I don't know, it just seems like it. I guess government gets in the way, and that just can't be the case. But
well, one thing
we're all
that
trying to do the same thing for the same purpose.
Sorry for interrupting.
I'm sorry. No, you're fine.
One thing to keep in mind is that technically you're not required to report an injury unless it's reported to workers' compensation. So there's that kind of rub as well. A lot of people could say, well, if I'm not required, you know, I don't have to do it. And they're not wrong either, you know. So if you just having injuries that aren't being reported to workers' compensation, technically those are voluntary and not required.
Mr. Sharma.
Thank you. Have you seen it, more reports or better reports for cancer from the past?
I'm not sure what you mean from the past. I mean, this year we got considerably more incidents of cancer reported to us. It was 70-something, and you can find that it's towards the end of the report, as opposed to previous years where we've only had, 20 or 30. So word is getting out, and people are reporting that kind of thing. Is that what you were getting at?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I understand it's also if it doesn't need to be reported to workers' comp, they don't need to as well, as it may affect their ability to work.
Right, exactly. Cancer's always been one of those kind of tricky subjects because, as we've talked about many times in the past, a lot of times people don't get cancer until after they're retired. Or if they do get it, they're not even sharing that information with their employer. That's just, you know, their own personal health problem that they're going through. Or maybe they think that, why would I report that? It's not necessarily a workplace injury, although, I mean, we kind of know a little bit better now about firefighting. But, you know, there are also those issues that kind of prevent people from even maybe bringing it up to where it's going to be reported. So, but I think that, you know, just from us talking about it a lot, that it is getting reported more often now.
Mr. Chairman, can I make a comment,
yes,
please? And this kind of addresses Commissioner Coatney's idea. We are getting the information out there about the importance of the injury reporting and stuff like that, especially burn injuries and stuff like that, because that triggers something else in our system and stuff like that. But we have seen a trend where there are some departments that hang on to injury reports and don't report them to us until a year or a year and a half after it happens. So there's some skew in the numbers there just for that. And we are getting the information about how important it is to report the injuries to us for that reason, so we can give you guys factual data. So.
I will add that if you'll give me and staff some time, I think we can find a way to do what you're asking about as far as reaching out to everybody. We just need to spend some time figuring out the best way to do that, because there's 1,700 regulated entities. It might take a minute to get that feedback, but we'll certainly work on it.
Thank you.
And I appreciate, and Chief, I appreciate that for sure, and because I agree with what Commissioner Coatney's saying, and I definitely, because I heard what Grace was also saying about, you know, sitting down and making phone calls, and I, for one, was not asking you to, I was not trying to put more on your plate, and I want to go back and say how I preface my comments. What I see there, you know, in the report, as I look through it, and what you've done, it's fantastic, and I really do appreciate it. You really do great work for us. My only comments were about the regulated agencies that aren't providing you the data to make sure that what you're providing us is even better. So it was definitely not a slight at staff, and I don't think you took it that way, but I just want to make sure that's real clear. I really appreciate what staff has done on this, and you for sure, but I agree with Commissioner Coatney. Hopefully, you know, something easier, email or letter, something that's pretty automated so that you're not having to spend a lot of time to get them to do what they're supposed to be doing.
We'll get our heads together and come up with something to-
Thank you.
A little more effective job with that.
Okay. Commissioners, any other comments? Grace, thank you for that report. Commissioners, I'm going to recommend that we take about a 10-minute break. We've been going for quite a while, so we'll reconvene in 10 minutes. Turn your microphones off. Commissioners, please turn your microphones back on. When we left off prior to the 10 or so minute break, we were at item 17.
Matters from the agency chief. A, update regarding agency duties and responsibilities. B, decision of the agency chief in contested cases and consent orders. And C, status regarding division functions, including 1, training approval and testing, test administered training approvals, record reviews, and online training audits. 2, certification and professional development, training applications, IFSAC seals issued, certifications issued, training facilities, curriculum development, and library resource requests. 3, compliance, including biannual inspections, compliance officer training, issues involving regulated entities. And 4, information technology, including public website design, farm and phyto improvements, CAPS, IT security policy, and service requests.
Commissioner, we'll start with A. This is going to be the bulk of it, and there's a little bit to cover here, so bear with me. But first, we have started the regional meetings again. We've conducted 2 already, Longview, and this week we were in El Paso. Our next one is Round Rock on the 26th of this month, followed by Seguin on May the 3rd. They're going well. There's already been a lot of discussion about the things we're talking about. We're updating them on the new voluntary certs that are being developed. We're reinforcing the message about reporting the injuries and all, and we're going to continue to work on that. Just tidbit. It's always been said that we need to be doing more in the media, and so I don't know. Somebody got to somebody, and the Weather Channel reached out to us the beginning of the week, and they wanted an interview yesterday, so I did an interview on the Weather Channel Live yesterday afternoon, in case you hear about it. I tried to smile, combed my hair, we did all right. But their questions were in dealing with lightning strikes and fires that are caused by that, and they indicated they wanted to talk about house fires and how to prevent some of that, and then they put me on the spot about talking about wildland fires, so I had to make up a bunch of crap. But anyway, I think it went all right. So if you see that, we did that at their request. Appointments, there are four of you currently. You're here, your terms have expired. There's been some conversation with the appointment office. I helped facilitate getting the required list of names from the fire chiefs and from the State Association of Firefighters. I think the goal in talking to the appointments office, they're going to try to have something approved by the legislature on May the 12th or 13th. I think that was the deadline. So hoping that by the end of May we've got some progress and we know what we're doing there. All of the four of you who are currently serving now after expired terms are eligible for reappointment. We had that conversation. That doesn't mean that's what they're going to do, but all of you are eligible for it. So we are working with them on that to try to get something finalized there. Real quick, legislative update as far as the agency is concerned. A lot of talk for over a year now about our budget, our exceptional request. We had eight of them. As we sit here today, I can tell you that from both the House and the Senate, all of our exceptional items are currently in the budget. What that means right now is absolutely nothing, other than they both agreed that what we were asking for was important and appeared to be justified. So now they are in conference committee. This is where they hash it out and they figure out where they're not all on the same page and they work through their differences. I think mid to late May is when we'll finally see a final budget document come out from that conference committee, and so until then, I'm not going to tell you we got everything we asked for, but I can tell you right now, it's looking pretty good for us. And that's clearly they did pay increases for all state employees, but vehicles for us, some additional FTE positions, some money for us to move our office to the sixth floor of this building, and some money to do some IT upgrades. We basically submitted a wish list for IT upgrades. As it stands today, both sides saw fit to give us that. So we'll see how that plays out. We are already working, though, on a plan. As I told staff a couple weeks ago, look out because we're about to catch the car. So when we catch it, we better be able to hang on. So we're starting to work our plans for the inevitability that all of these things are granted to us and we need to have a plan for September 1. So we are starting to work on that right now, knowing that none of it's final at this point. The second legislative piece there is there was a House Bill 4073 through Urban Affairs. The committee chair sought me out and had me come sit in his office and explain our agency's role because they have oversight over the agency. He asked if there was anything we needed. That's where 4073 came from. It is a piece of legislation that would change 419, where it specifies that you can let your certification expire for 1 year and no longer. And if you're outside of that 1 year, you would have to retest and do the skills. This proposal would really put that back in your hands as commissioners, and you can come up with some kind of sliding scale for someone up to a five-year mark. So let's say I retire and I let go of my certification, and then a year and a half later I decide I want it back for a job. Right now I got to take a test and do the skills. This law change would give you the ability to say that from 1 to 5 years you'd have to do this, this, and this and pay this amount of money and you can get it back. After 5 years, the law is going to say that you would have to take the test and do the skills and all that. So basically what this change would do is take a piece of the law and kind of give it back to this agency to lay out how somebody would accomplish getting their certification back in that five-year stretch. That has successfully made it through the House. It got voted out of calendars 6 days after it went to calendars. It is now in the hands of the Senate, and on the 18th, which would have been Tuesday, They voted it out to the local affairs committee, local government committee of the Senate. They have not set a hearing for it yet, but we're watching that to see when that is going to happen. So that bill is moving through pretty quick, and they all seem to be supportive. The stakeholders in our meetings every month with the consortium, we've been meeting monthly. All the stakeholders supported it. All of them submitted a card or came to the House hearing and spoke in favor of it. That's clearly how you get this done. If there's no opposition, they're more inclined to support it, and everybody seems to be on the same page with this right now. So it's running through the Senate committee process right now. I don't see any problems with that, but I'll keep you posted on that. There are some other legislative pieces that put some responsibility on us in the realm of mental health and some other things, and we're watching those to see where they go. And the various committees have been good about asking for relevant information about that from the agency. So we don't testify. We just offer commentary when asked. And so we're following a handful of bills that would bring about some change for us here. Really, that's it on A. On B, there's nothing. And on C, everybody should have seen what was in the notebook. So I'll just ask if there are any questions or concerns about anything you read under C, the different reports from the different divisions.
Okay. Commissioners, any other questions for Agency Chief Wisco? All right. Seeing none, we will move to item 18.
Personnel matters regarding the appointment, employment, compensation, evaluation, reassignment, and duties of the agency chief.
I don't believe we have anything to discuss on this item, so let's move on to. I'm sorry, Commissioner Jones.
On 18, I would like to, for the August meeting, I would like to have an executive session.
Okay. So go ahead.
On the personnel matters regarding the appointment, employment, compensation, evaluation, reassignment, and duties of the agency chief for 18.
An executive session.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else on 18? All right. We'll move to item 19.
Adjourn meeting.
I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Commissioner Glenn, second by Commissioner Morgan. Any other discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Item passes. I'd like to thank the audience again for being here today. We had a lot of great discussion back and forth, and we look forward to seeing you come back at our August meeting. Y'all have safe travels going home, and look out for bad weather. Commissioners, please turn off your microphones.